Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's topic, one less thing. Before we go on, though, I just wanted to remind folks that Mark and I will be in Los Angeles, California on May 20th for our one-day Effective Manager Conference. And if you're near LA, and if like a lot of folks during these times, you're interested in investing in something that will reap benefits for years to come, both professionally and financially, we hope you'll consider joining us in Los Angeles for the Effective Manager Conference on May 20th. As always, details are available on the website, www.managertools.com. All right, folks, here we go with the show. You know, there's this this thing out there that suggests that during bad times, like we're going through, or times of change, that being busy is like that's a good thing, right?
Right.
And I think a lot of folks don't realize that having some free time is necessary during times of great change. Do you agree?
Oh yeah. I mean, gosh. In fact, I generally don't agree with the concept of slack, which is a recent book about having free time. But on the other hand, I also don't agree with being fully scheduled all day, because too many people who are fully scheduled then act as if their schedule cannot be changed. And I meet very few non-executives who are fully scheduled who can truly show that the fully scheduled is a function of clear priorities and so on. And so what happens is we get busy and people think it's cool to be busy. They act as if they don't have time for other people, and they think it's a shield against new requirements and obligations. And it sends a message that I'm behaving at a higher level, that I have important stuff to do, whereas you apparently get to sit around and cool your heels.
Well, and during times like these, that's when we're going to get new stuff from our boss, right?
Exactly.
Especially if our boss is good, they're gonna want to react to the changes. And they're going to have new initiatives. They're going to have new projects. They're going to have new things for you to do. I guess it's great to have a shield of, well, I'm too busy, but I wouldn't want to be telling my boss that.
Yeah, I think, it's like any system. It's an organic system. It's why we call companies and firms organizations, because they are organic, because they have people in them. And organic systems don't do real well with really gross discontinuities. And it's a really gross discontinuity if the marketplace is suddenly giving your firm all kinds of new data, like 20% reduction in sales, and nobody changes any behavior internally. It doesn't make any sense. You know, this cast, I'm sure, will come out in the first or second quarter of 09. And so there's enormous discontinuities. Don't you want the senior executives in your firm changing what they're doing? And if they're changing what they're doing, should we all assume that they're going to change what they're doing, but we're not going to change what we're doing? No, of course not. And I think if people think it through that way, they'll go, oh yeah, you're right. Maybe I need to be able to have free time. I need to free up some time. Or maybe a manager is thinking, well, Mark, I already have some free time. Well, that's good. That's good. But we think there's a way to periodically, and probably more frequently than most managers or executives want to admit, to prune a little bit off of our calendars so that we can not only feel like we have more time, but demonstrate it and add something new, which addresses the realities of today or the realities of our boss if they've dropped something on us.
Good. So let's talk about how to do that.
Yeah, it's easy to free up time on your calendar. It really is. And it's very organic. It's very Darwinian. And there are basically three steps. You've got to review your last month's calendar. And we've got some specific recommendations there. You've simply got to make a choice about picking the least valuable action or task that you have calendared. We have some recommendations about what to look for there, although everybody's choices will be different. And then third, you have to drop that ball. In other words, whatever you were working on, you have to drop it, which is to say, delegate it. This is a Manager Tools cast. This is for managers. It certainly could work for individual contributors as well. We could repurpose this as a Career Tools cast as well. But of course, in some cases, an individual contributor wouldn't be able to delegate it. Some people feel an additional risk of having to drop the ball and knowing that it's going to fall through the cracks. But nevertheless, for a manager, what this means is delegating something you're doing. There is a case to be made that some of us are doing things that ought not to be delegated and ought not to be done either. But we're not going to pass judgment on those things because we don't know what particular choices managers are make. But we can give some guidance on how to review your calendar how to get the least valuable thing off of it and give it to one of your directs.
Okay, so I simply reviewed last month's calendar. I picked the least valuable action or task that's on that calendar, and I delegate it. That sounds simple, easy.
Yeah, it is. It's simple, and, you know, it is simple. And there are magazines dedicated to simplicity now, at least in the U.S., and apparently not everybody's doing all the simple things. Yeah, just because it's simple, and frankly, I would think easy, doesn't mean everybody's doing it. So this is a reminder of one of those basics that's why I use the phrase pruning, because All great, you know, botanists know to make a really successful organic plant, you've got to prune periodically. So,
okay. So let me stop you there a second, because I'm thinking there's some risk here. I mean, I'm doing everything on my calendar for a reason, right? I mean, I need to do those things to be successful. And so
I want to be smart like you.
Right. So, okay. Well, instead of making fun of me, why don't you tell me?
No, I'm serious. You're right. It's totally risky. Yeah. I mean, it's like we said earlier, right? If you continue to do the same thing you've always done, when the outside world is changing rapidly and perhaps even more directly, your bosses are changing the way they do things, that is risky as well, right?
Yeah.
Being the discontinuity in the system is risky.
So you're suggesting that it might even be more risky to not do anything different.
Yeah, exactly. And for those people who say, well, I don't really want to change, well, then okay, you've got no credibility telling the senior executives they need to change if you're not willing to do it as well. Let he who be without sin cast the first stone, so to speak. So yeah, it is risky. You're absolutely right. I was kidding a little bit, but it is simple. It's easy to understand. It's simple to do. The choices are not terribly hard, and there is risk. We simply think the risk of doing the same thing is insidious in that it's invisible, whereas the risk of changing is obvious. And most people tend to choose the insidious or invisible risk rather than the obvious risk. But that's not a good analysis of which one is more dangerous or which one's bigger. The fact is, in today's environment, in the economic situation we have now, the kind of discontinuous forces that exist, it's probably the obvious risk that is better than the insidious, invisible one.
Okay, so you convinced me. So I'm willing to look at this stuff. Okay, so we're going to review last month's calendar. Well, that seems about as simple as we've ever gotten here at Manager Tools. I mean, how hard can that be?
Right. I mean, you literally just print out last month's, you know, the last 4 to 5 weeks worth of appointments. And we recommend a month because we found that it's not an unappreciable amount of monthly recurring items for most managers and certainly for executives and so on. Doesn't really matter if you print out from the 15th of the previous month to the 15th of this month or the 10th to the 10th, generally 1 30 to 35 day period, particularly when we've done this with coaching with executives, any 30, 35 day period captures everything we need to do and everything we need to see basically to do a good broad analysis.
Really? Yeah. You say that, but, that's not always what we find when we coach managers and executives. We find that people often can't do that.
Yeah, you remember, well, it's the classic thing, right? What do we tell everybody when somebody says, will you coach me? I said, sure, the two things we look for, right? And you've seen it. The two things we look for are, okay, what do you think your priorities are? What do you say your priorities are? And then let's see your calendar.
And the calendar is blank.
Well, the whole calendar blank thing is stunning to me.
Yeah, and it's blank. And I think we ought to share this caveat with folks is sometimes it's blank, but also it's not often a reflection of the actual work they're doing. It doesn't reflect reality. It reflects their plan, maybe.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, then that's another, like you said, that's another issue completely. But even when folks are using their calendar, it doesn't reflect where they actually spent their time.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it takes a little bit more than a month just to break some old habits and make the calendar an effective tool for analyzing where you're spending your time.
Yeah, their calendars aren't historically accurate. And this goes back to a whole system thinking mentality, which is there's a plan, and then there's the action of the plan. And then there's a review of the action versus the plan, which most people don't think of in terms of their calendar. Okay, I planned my month. This is what I planned. How close did I stick to my plan? Would the plan have produced better results in my thinking than what I actually did? And does this prove that I need to be more disciplined about sticking to my plan or not? So yeah, what happens is we look at their month worth of calendar, And there's no evidence that it's an accurate portrayal. It shows what they were scheduled to do, but then they've got this trip. They say, oh, I didn't go on that trip. We had to cancel the last minute. We had to do this. We had to do that. And so it may not be immediately available to you. We may have to take a month where we, and we have some recommendations about how to do it, take a month to get that information accurate, to get a historically accurate representation of your calendar. And basically, you know, this is probably one of those hidden gem moments in our cast, is that an effective executive or manager for that purpose, not only manages his calendar well in advance, he then manages all the changes. And at the end of each day, he knows it is an accurate historical representation of his spending of his most precious resource, according to Peter Drucker, which is his time. But look, it's okay. It really is okay if we look at our calendars and we realize how off it is from reality. I mean, I think if I looked at my calendar, Mike, if you looked at your, I'm guessing, I'll speak for me. I could do better at this myself. So don't want people out there thinking, oh my gosh, everybody else is doing this, is not me. Not true. And also, it's not worth, in our experience working with executives, it's not worth going back and trying to remember, quote unquote. I just did air quotes on the air, by the way.
Oh, I saw it. I don't yeah, think anybody else did it.
It's not worthwhile. It's wasted effort to go back and try to remember what we were, quote, really doing those days. Because we've seen it. Executives can't do, you just can't do it. I mean, we'll give ourselves some grace and we're going to spend one more month using all those terrible old bad habit time management techniques. And over the course of the month, we're going to end up with a good, accurate month worth of historically accurate calendar data. And at that point, then we'll start thinking about going to step two, which is the analysis.
Yeah. Well, the real challenge here, though, is that it's pretty easy for most managers to remember to do all this stuff for a day or two. But
yeah,
within a week, we all fall off the wagon, including myself.
Yeah. You start thinking about it. You say, hey, this is going to be good. I'm going to be helpful. And then you get busy. Look, we started out by saying everybody's busy. Whether they're actually productive is different. And we have two recommendations on that. One is, it's a small, but it's an important change to get your calendar to be accurate. The easiest thing is to enlist an administrative assistant if you have one. In your next one-on-one or in your next morning stand-up, if you don't know what a morning stand-up is, you need to go back and listen to our cast on working with your admin. Ask him to start tracking a couple of times each day what you actually did that day versus what you were scheduled to do. Literally, you change the calendar in arrears to show what actually happened. I have frequent meetings. I'm not perfect at this, but I have frequent notes on my things saying we had a meeting and it has XLD on it, which is canceled, or RX'd, which is rescheduled. And then suspenses relative to when it's going to be rescheduled for. And the measure, it is very simple. The measure to use for his work on your behalf is that at the end of each day, your calendar is essentially accurate for that day. And then the second thing we recommend is to do a reconciliation at the end of each day. And this is not trivial. Let me put it this way. It's fairly straightforward to do, but many managers struggle with it.
Yeah, particularly if you're not good at managing your calendar, because you need to put this on your calendar to do the reconciliation.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's good. Okay. Nice. Good one. People can't remember what they were doing at 10 o'clock in the morning. But after a day or two, you get better at taking notes on a printed calendar if you carry that around during the day, or adjusting on your smartphone or on your Filofax or Daytimer or what have you.
Yeah.
You know, and you'll be better at updating it on the fly, and that will make it easier at the end of the day. And basically at the end of the day, if you've got an electronic calendar, which, you know, I have an assumption in my head, could be wrong, that the majority of people who are listening to us have an electronic calendar. And at the end of the day, before you go home, you make sure the calendar reflects what you're doing. Now, the fact that you have big swaths of time that are unscheduled, and yet you're not achieving anything toward your primary goal, and yet you seem incredibly busy, and you wonder really whether how productive you are, busyness being not necessarily the same thing as productivity being the holy grail, that's a different problem. Yeah. That's one for priority management. And this process will help you understand that better. But it may be that after you get done with this process, you'll look and go, maybe the first thing I ought to do is start scheduling the right stuff before I start to decide what to prune.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. And look, another little gem here. Many of us are going to get sick to death when we see that. We are.
Yeah, and you're not alone, though.
Exactly.
Trust us. You're not alone.
Yeah, just don't turn this into a beat yourself up, because it's not worth it. The question is, how can we be more productive? And this is one way, if you're busy, to at least take one thing off of your list. And it's still viable. No matter how much junk or non-junk we're all doing, getting rid of the least valuable one is still a great professional pruning exercise, we call it. Think of it as spring cleaning. And in times of really fast change, for those of you who are a little bit older, think of it as winter, spring, summer, fall cleaning.
There you go. Let's don't drive past that too quick, because I think there's a key point in there. It doesn't matter whether you're doing junk stuff or non-junk. It doesn't matter. Don't fall into looking at it as, everything I'm doing is important. It's non-junk. Therefore, I can't drop any of it. That would be a mistake as well.
Yeah. You know, I had a conversation with a guy a couple of years ago, and he said something very interesting. We were talking about, I was coaching another executive on time management, and he chuckled. He said, we're having a discussion relative to what needs to be done and what doesn't need to be done. And that's a tough choice. And he said, Mark, you know, from a 30,000 foot perspective, one of the things that's always bothered me is I have seen managers hunched over their desk with tension in their back and their hands on the keyboard and on the mouse, looking at a screen and just absolutely agonizing over the distance between bullets and the spacing on a slide and how many bullets on a slide. And yet I don't think I've ever seen a manager sitting down going, okay, I'm doing 13 things. What 12 of them do I need to be doing? He said, if we took every hour that managers spent on PowerPoint finagling, PowerPoint rangering, if you will, and made that 15 minutes and took back 45 and put it into time management, one thing that would happen would be there are a lot of those PowerPoint slides. But that is really, for those of you who know, the second chapter of Effective Executive, Peter Drucker's seminal work. A manager and executive knows where his or her time goes. And managing to this is hugely powerful.
Yeah. And just imagine, if you're having a problem with this concept, just think about what it would be like if you could get 1 hour back a day.
Ugh.
Well, I mean, what a difference that would make. And in our experience, that's fairly easy to do.
Yeah. I think there are some people who would say, wow, that's like an entire Saturday morning. And wait, I'm already working on Saturday morning or Sunday night.
Yeah. And then maybe I can prioritize my family appropriately.
Yeah. Maybe your family should be number one, maybe.
So, okay. So it's conceptually simple. We'll just get rid of something. So how do we do that? How do we pick the least valuable action or task on our calendar to get rid of?
I don't care. I'm busy. I got other stuff to do today. No, I'm kidding. Look, most managers do probably have a pretty good sense. Once they have a list, right? Once they have that list worked out from their calendar, they look over the course of the month, they have a pretty good sense of what is less valuable from their own perspective. And going back to the story of John the Gate Guard and you know, Mark, please, where's the book that has the list of what the metrics are? Don't assume that there is some list of what you should be working on in every single case and you're being judged against it. That's generally not the case. It's not important that any other manager would necessarily choose the same things to delegate that you would. And now, that's not to say that there couldn't be somebody who would figure out better ones to delegate than you. And yeah, there's inherent risk in your job. You could be making poor choices now. On the other hand, we can't know for certain what we write, and we just have some general guidelines that will help tend to float some things to the top and push some things to the bottom in terms of the ranking. The idea being the things at the bottom are the things that need to fall through the cracks, so to speak. And the first one is, be cautious of looking, be cautious of exposure. And the way we describe it is look for lower level exposure in terms of things that'll be toward the bottom. And what I mean by that is don't choose something you're working on that has a lot of exposure to folks two levels above you. If your boss's boss or one of her peers regularly attends the meetings you're going to on a particular project or a task that's on your calendar, don't delegate that one. On the other hand, if the highest level person at a regular meeting is only at your boss's level, you could put that project or task on the potential or the possible to delegate list. So the first thing we look at is higher level exposure. Don't be delegating the stuff that are the things that get you higher level exposure. Not because we're trying to make you look perfect. This is not a looking glass exercise. Rather, this is that ought to give you some indication of where more brain power, more insight, more managerial breadth and scope would be involved. And that tends to be something that's less delegatable. It's not undelegatable. It just means it ought not to be at the top of your list for delegating it. The higher the exposure, the higher it ought to be on your list, which means less likely to be delegated because we're going to be delegating the stuff at the bottom of the list.
Yeah. And another one I think folks can look at is look for the smaller budget items. You know, make a list of the budgets associated with all of your projects and the work processes and all those things that you're contemplating delegating. Mm-hmm. And pick the one with some lower budget. Don't take something that's, you know, the top of the range in terms of budget and delegate that one. That's
because somebody in the organization is looking strictly at budget, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Your smaller budget stuff are on the schneid, so to speak. And they may end up below the Mendoza line, which the Mendoza line here would be those things that we end up delegating. Also, another thing, look for things that are lesser in organizational scope. The projects that serve or touch the entire firm, even if you're a small or large firm, regardless, are unlikely candidates for delegation, I mean. As you're measuring, as you're looking, as you're analyzing, if there are efforts that only serve one customer, internal or otherwise, or only one other department is involved in planning, those would be potential delegation candidates. Now, you know, we've given you three general recommendations that should help you sift the list a little bit. We have a couple of more, but this is where we've gotten pushback from managers saying, Mark, you don't understand. Everything's important. Everything, da, 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 da. You know, it's just, I can't, you know, gosh, one customer, I can't delegate that thing because it touches one customer and we're told the customer stuff is so important. We're not wrong to suggest here's the sifting process. What we're suggesting here is that if you believe everything's the same level of importance, then nothing is important. Nothing is important. One of the first things we have to do is put priorities on things. If you're not doing it, if you defend to your boss and to your peers and to your team that everything's important, you are going to be left behind in your career. There just aren't that many people in the world who can handle 13 priority number ones. In fact, it's not really possible. And a good analysis, a good Drucker time analysis, about which we have a cast, by the way, will show that, no, that's really not the case. You say everything's important, but it's not. That's not a reason to say you're wrong. It just means probably you've over-prioritized everything. You've essentially crunched everything down into a one and a two, when in fact there are probably shades of difference in there that are worthwhile. And if you have everything as number one and you can't delegate, that's fine. You just need to be quiet about people at the top not changing their behavior in a difficult situation. And when your boss comes to you and says, I need you to do something more, you should say, I'm sorry, I can't.
Yeah. Your power as a manager comes from largely your ability to focus, and not prioritizing and therefore having no focus is somewhat like shooting an arrow without an arrowhead on it. Right? The blunt end of a shaft of wood hits the target and is likely to do much less damage than a well-focused, sharpened arrowhead point.
Nice. And are you saying then that continuous partial, if my job is to stay focused, the continuous partial attention might be a problem?
It may be. And
it may be.
Folks, this is not in the show notes. Mark and I had another conversation about Twitter this morning. So that's some inside baseball comments there. But
yeah. And for those of you who don't know, I am Twittering at M.A. Horstman. So if you want to follow me, I'm not going to tell you what's going on in my life because my life is boring. But I will tell you what I'm thinking about management and about careers because people apparently want to know about it. So I'll be happy to share those things that aren't big enough to make it a podcast or a video or what have you.
Yeah. So if you want to get a Twitter about how Twittering is bad, then just feel free to. No, just kidding.
I can't fit how Twittering is bad into 140 characters.
Okay. All right. Let's move on here. Another item that folks can look for, which is look for bad meetings. You know, we look to delegate any bad meetings that we go to. We don't enjoy them and they're not terribly useful. And sometimes you have no choice but to be represented in the meeting. So delegate that. Now, okay, so it's going to feel a little bit like you're delegating your bad work to somebody, but we've covered in previous casts that your time is, by definition, more valuable to the organization than your directs. And so if it's an hour of your time versus an hour of your directs, and the direct can do it, the direct should do it.
Right.
So And by bad meetings, we mean meetings that start late, finish late, don't accomplish anything. They're poorly attended by senior people, if at all. And by the way, if you're running that meeting, that's a different issue entirely.
Yeah, that's a whole, yeah, if you're running a bad meeting, that's not a time management problem, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
and one other thing we can recommend is to look at reporting. These last two, bad meetings and reporting, are things that we want you to look at that might give you an indication of things that fall to the bottom, whereas with the previous three recommendations were things we'd want you to be careful of in terms of keeping at the top or looking at things that would stay toward the top in terms of scope and budget and exposure. But looking at reporting, too many of us, and I think rightfully so, seem to hate reporting, but then we seem to keep it to ourselves and we want to do it so we can complain about it. Reporting is a classic opportunity for delegation to free up times in crisis of change. Now, if you don't think you have, if you don't have reporting, creating reports on your calendar, then your calendar is not historically accurate.
Right.
Now, we don't recommend when we talk about delegating reporting that in 1 week or 2 weeks, you're suddenly delegating a report and it's and promulgating it across the organization, but rather delegating the preparation of it. And something else too, that this may be a case where as a manager, you don't have to delegate because in fact, you might want to consider stopping zero-based reporting, ZBR. You literally eliminate the report and see how much rain, how much acid rain falls on your head. And if no acid rain falls on your head, it's worthy of consideration should we not be doing this report anymore at all.
Right. And do your folks a favor, too. Look at the reports that you get, that your folks prepare, that you don't even read anymore, and eliminate those as well. That'd be a kind thing to do.
That'd be kind, yeah.
Yeah, and there's more of those than I care to delve into at this point. Before we get into the next step, which is to essentially delegate this stuff, I just one other consideration folks might want to think a little bit about is look for developmental opportunities. If you have a direct that you're coaching on a particular task or skill and you do that regularly, maybe that's an opportunity to do some coaching and delegate it that way. Or somebody who's promotable and they need to learn some of the skills or tasks that you regularly perform. Another opportunity to take that off your plate and delegate it. So,
yeah, I'm reading a great book about Sense of Urgency. And it's a little light, but it's good. And it talks in there about, hey, when stuff happens, we delegate. And the guy said, that's why we're executives, because we know how to do that. And it gave you the impression that we're not looking for just the bottom thing. We're looking for the bottom half to delegate, because that's how we develop people.
Ooh, I like that. Okay, we're going to start here, though, just delegating the bottom thing or things.
Yeah, thing. Just one ball at a time, please.
Good. Okay, so now let's talk about, so step three is simple, delegate it.
Yeah, and this is the easiest part of this cast because we've already done a cast or two or three on delegation. We'll go over it, but please don't let this be your only exposure to the concept of delegation, and that is the Manager Tools delegation model, or really more precisely, I think, I use the word script because we just want to give you a step forward into the conversation. Basically, you state your need for help. We say, hey, Ricardo, I need your help. We tell Ricardo why we're asking him. We say, you're my best project manager, for instance. We ask him to accept the delegation, even though we haven't shared the details. I'm not going to tell you why that is in this cast, but if you listen to delegation cast, you'll understand why that is absolutely critical to ask before going over the detail. You say, would you please take over Project X, for instance? After that, by the way, 80% of the time people say yes, believe it or not. Then you describe the details. You say, here's what it entails. You go over the deadline and the quality standards that you need. We clarify our reporting standards. And then we ask if they need any help. What do you need from me? It's very straightforward. It's designed to be brief, 3 or 4 minutes, because we want to get them working rather than having a conversation for an hour about what they're going to be doing. It's very simple. And the key, the way to get there, if you're looking to free up time, is to review your previous month's calendar. And if you don't have it, you got to go back and do it. And you can do that. It just takes a little bit of discipline every day or using your admin. And then look at your list and pick one or two things, perhaps, or even more that are least valuable that got calendared, and go ahead and delegate them. And that's it.
Yeah. And this is one of these things that's got to fit into the category of rinse, lather, repeat, right?
Oh, that's right.
Once you do it, once you get rid of your low hanging fruit, then come back a month later and do it again.
Yeah, do it again. Yeah. In fact, I think as a general rule, and I think we need to talk more about risk, because you and I are being high Ds, right? We're comfortable with risk. And yet sometimes there are people who are listening who say, you know, my job is to avoid risk. In fact, there's a healthy bit of management literature that says management is about reducing risk, but that doesn't mean you eliminate it entirely. And as a manager, you're trying to reduce risk for the organization, but that may mean doing somewhat risky things. And the fact is that you may want to continue delegating until you feel pain. And that may be a good indication that you've probably gone about far enough.
Good. All right, my friend.
All right. Thanks, partner.
Enjoyed it. We'll see you.
All right, everyone. That's it. Thanks for joining us, and we hope to see you again next week. So long.